Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Boom Chuck, a drummer's podcast. I'm Chris Phillips. I am super excited to talk to my guest this time. This guy blows my mind with every one of his posts. This is my first time meeting him. He's my fellow Michigan brother. I cannot wait to get into his brain and talk about gear, drums, where things come from, where his heart lies. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get right into it. Scott Pellegrim.
Well, how are you? That's a nice space you got back there.
Oh, I just redid it. I just redid this whole thing. So,
dude, congrats. That's fucking great. I'm in the process right now because of everything that happened of shopping and actually committing to buying a house so I can build out a studio.
Yeah.
And my full office space and all that stuff too. So, yeah.
And you're up in, so you're in Grand Haven, right?
Yeah, I'm in Grand Haven.
Okay. That's like what, an hour from Traverse City, something like that?
About 2 hours. I'm playing Traverse City tonight and tomorrow night.
Okay.
And then driving right back home and then flying out to Cali to work out there for the week.
Right on.
But I love Traverse City. That's my home to me, man. I fucking love that place.
I mean, yeah, like I said earlier, I was born in Ipsy, right? So I grew up southeastern Michigan, and then my sister-in-law, brother-in-law live up in Traverse City. They live right on the Boardman. So, like, their backyard is the river.
Are you kidding? Dude, give me their number, and I will like, mow their lawn to have good access to the Boardman. I'm going up there to fish. After my gig, I'm going to Shelda Creek at the mouth where it flows into Lake Michigan to surf fish at night.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'm going to fish all morning and probably hit the river, and then I'll go back to the gig and then come home. Like, that's how I tour in Michigan. Forage, you know, finding my mushrooms because morel season is about ready to pop.
Right.
Trout fish, steelhead fish, salmon. It's like fishing, foraging, and touring go hand in hand for me.
I'll hook you guys up, and you guys, I mean.
Absolutely. I would love to have, I try to make as many friends as possible, especially when it comes to music and fishing, foraging, because, like, that's my whole life. That's even the people I hire.
Yeah.
Have to be willing to do that because that's what we'll do on our day off or free time, you know, in between gigs. And I love just having access place to be like, hey, I'll take you out for breakfast and let's go hit the river or something. Or I'll cook you breakfast on the river.
There you go.
You know, let's go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that's cool. Yeah. Are you from the west side of the state then? So you've like lived your whole life doing this.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I was born in Grand Haven Hospital.
Okay.
My parents were originally kind of from this area, and they I'm the youngest of five.
Yeah.
There's a 21-year gap between myself and my eldest brother.
Okay.
And then a 20-year gap, then a 16-year gap, then a 7-year gap, and then me, right?
Nice.
And I was kind of raised as an only child because the rest of siblings were gone. My sister was around for a few years, and then I was kind of an only child,
right,
but I always had my siblings coming in and out. And I was on a farm.
Yeah.
So I literally, the things I did as a boy, like my childhood, I feel so blessed. Like I look back at it, even compared to what's going on in today's world and how everyone is really, really locked into social media,
right,
and everything's online and that's kind of your hopes, dream, success. I grew up literally, you know, sound crazy to people now, but like, I learned how to hunt and fish and make bows and arrows and build teepees and make sod huts and forage. I was able to cook and clean and build my own like survival shelters by the time I was like 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and I was way into it. And I did all that by myself. And I spent a lot of time with animals where we had an Arabian horse farm and cattle farm. My dad raised and bred exotic birds. So we had even endangered birds.
Yeah.
We had monkeys, we had tortoises, and we had a massive, massive garden.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so it was like I was raised that way and I didn't know any different. And it wasn't until I was getting a little bit older and like you start going to grade school and then you're into like junior high. And that was about the time I like around eighth grade, I think my parents sold the farm and I moved closer to the high school I went to. But up until then, my whole life was like, why would you want to be in this little suburb place when you could literally, like, I'm shooting guns and, like, you know, building fires and fishing and camping overnight.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And then aside from doing that, I listened to music and I played music all the time, and I never had neighbors to tell me to shut up.
Right. Isn't that weird how, like, I mean, so, yeah, the same thing. Like, we grew up just outside of Ann Arbor, so it was a little bit of the country, and we had neighbors that they were totally cool with me playing drums. It started, and it was like, there was times at 10 o'clock at night they'd come out and be like, all right, enough with the drums, yeah, or whatever.
Enough.
And then when we started recording, it was kind of like, oh, well, the drums are done. We can do all this other stuff in box and yada, yada, yada. But, yeah, man, all outside, all woods. I'm outside of Raleigh now, and my seasons, winter here is not like winter there, right? Like, right. I hate snow. I've toured enough during the winter. I'm just like, I don't like ice. I don't like snow. So my wife was like, let's move to North Carolina. I was like, sign me up. Let's go. It's been nice there, right?
Yeah, it's been real nice, actually. And you know how Michigan is. It could be like, hey, it looks like it's going to, I think it's snowing. And now an hour later, it's 75 and sunny.
Yeah.
And it'll be like that. And it's been nice. I mean, I've been out steelhead fishing a ton, and the run has been absolutely insane this year. Nice. It looks like a salmon run.
Really?
Like, on some of the, I've never seen steelhead runs like this. It's just thick and heavy. And I've been taking a lot of my friends out because I like to kind of pretend to be a guide. I just get my friends out. I have all the gear and tackle. I don't even care if I fish, if I go, you know, I just like to get my homies out, get them in the waders and in the water, you know, and just spend 5 to 10 hours and make a little meal on the shore side there and get into fish. So yeah, it's been real good doing that. Now the morels is starting to pop, and it's all because that weather. We actually are having a spring. It normally just goes cold, miserable, cold, miserable. Now it's 90 degrees for the next 3 months.
Right.
It's like the faucet just, you know, switches.
Yep. And so that's the cool thing is down here, it's 90 degrees for 9 months. And then I have 3 months of like, it's got a little chilly, you know, kind of thing. So it's beautiful down here. It's just, it's that same thing. But yeah, you're making me want to, I'm coming up in July and you're making me want to like hook up with you and just go trail through the woods.
You should cruise it. Like, let me know when you're coming up, because I mean, I'm the only like real travel stuff I'm doing is still like doing work for virtual things, right? Virtual workshops, virtual lessons, product demos, podcasts, like everywhere I'm going, I'm doing work, and it's still just in the digital world, you know, all recording everything. I'm doing some gigs tonight and stuff, but like, you know, I'm okay for this year not trying to push myself at all to tour,
because
there's no reason to, right? So I want to be here and keep enjoying. That's kind of what that year that happened that was named twice,
right?
So we don't forget it, but we're trying to forget it,
right?
You know, that taught me to slow down, to be patient. I finally was able to be home for a year so I could complete an entire garden. And you know, like, and see it from start to finish and harvest it. And a lot of stuff like that I haven't been able to do. I got a second dog, my pandemic puppy.
Nice.
Phoenix. You know, Pegasus is my homeboy, and he just turned 7, and I named the second album coming out after him, and he's on the album cover, like looking super thug.
Nice.
And then got Phoenix, and been training her to be a music dog and a fishing dog, and she loves it, she kills it. So now it's just me and the two pups roaming and fishing and
it's awesome.
Recording and they do well in the studio. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, it was the same thing with me. Like, granted, my band took a nosedive. My bandmate lived in Grand Rapids until, 2 years ago, and he moved down here just so we could do more, record. And it's the same thing. Like, it turns into, oh man, let's hit the road. And we did a small run, and then bam, pandemic. And it was like, and I'm not ready to go. And I don't know what the numbers are. I know Michigan's always up and down with the numbers and stuff.
It's so up and down right now because no one, you know, not to get into much, but people just aren't willing to just compromise for anything right now. It's like, either I say this or I say that. And it's like, come on, can we just meet between? Can we just be adults, everyone, for a minute and just look out for one another and say, what do we have to do? What's really going on? Let's get this shit down. Right now, people are freaking out. I think because we're like, we've been cooped up for so long and now it's beautiful. So people want to go out and like party and do spring break stuff. And
that's fine. We're just doing it too soon. Stay away from each other.
Stay away or be very clean and, you know, cover yourself. just it's helped for a lot of other things. I mean, I don't know anyone that got the flu, anyone that got a cold, anyone that got a sinus infection
right.
at all. Everyone's been really healthy
around me. And that's the thing. Everyone stayed – when it got nasty up there, everyone stayed inside and no one went out to bars and did all the – you know what I mean? Like,
yep.
it sucked for the bar scene and all this other stuff, but it was like – dude, the beer's still going good up there. Coffee's still going good up there. Like, things are still happening. It's a very – it's strange seeing, like, what people are willing to do and willing not to do. Like, yeah, I got my shot. Like, it's a vaccine. You know, it is what it is. There's a reason I don't have polio, you know, kind of thing. And so everybody believes in something different. But if you're not taking at least mask wearing and all this other stuff seriously, then whatever. But it's like, to me, I'm like – for me to go out and tour and create and perform, which is what my job was, I can't do that without being vaccinated, really, at this point, you know?
Exactly.
So.
I just said, hey, all I want to do is I want to be happy, and I want to try and make people happy.
Right.
I want to keep traveling and learning about this life and this world and the diversity and the spectrums of everything.
Yeah.
And it's like, if I can get a card that says I'm vaccinated and I've done this and I also am taking care of myself to be sanitary,
right,
then that means I can go out and teach. I can go out and study. I can do some session work. I can meet and do all these other things that I've wanted to do or was about to do. So I just want to get on with that side. And other than that, I am like, I'm home and I'm very content being home. And if I'm not in the house, I'm in the woods, and the only people I work with are all of my really good friends who all do the exactly same thing, who all also are very sanitary and take care of themselves, and they do get testing whenever they even like, hey, just want to be safe, I'm gonna go get a rapid test. So we're all very, like, we call it, you know, it was the quarantine, you know.
Oh yeah, I got a quarantine for sure.
It got us through and it helped us out, and it was great. And now I'm just at the point, like, I feel blessed that I was able to get the vaccine, and I'm able to start kind of moving around again and seeing what's shaken. Because everything has changed. I think people are gonna, in the next year or two, when they look back, if we're looking, let's just say, music industry, music focus, all of that stuff, everything has changed, and it already had changed. Everyone had already seen that, you know, the old business model was totally, it worked for the musicians, and then that was canned because everything's streaming and we're trying to find a way to make money. And then all of a sudden, hey, we're not touring and we're not selling all the merch we do and all the other physical things. We realize there's a lot of loopholes in what we do as musicians and how we make money, and we are not able to make money the old school way, and the new school way doesn't work.
Right.
And now everything has kind of crashed, and a lot of people have shifted on what they're doing. A lot of people have left the industry.
Right.
You know, or they're like, I'm just going to take a break for a while and be a realtor, you know, or just whatever.
Right.
So it's we're kind of at a Wild West period with music. And that's what I'm interested in right now, because we're at some type of a breaking point or tipping point.
Yeah.
With the music and music industry. And I'm really excited to see what happens musically and, like, business industry wise.
Right. And so, but you've set yourself up nicely, though, I think. So you're an official teacher for Drumeo, right? Like, that's a new, not a new thing, that came out, and you're, like, doing actually, like, online kind of, it's session work, but, like, the drum world has people like you and stuff where it's just, like, you're a creator, but you do it for music, for drums specifically, which is awesome. I love it. So it's, like.
Yeah, right, thanks.
You've set yourself up to where it's more, you can do things outside of just touring and doing all this stuff. There's this whole, like you said, virtual thing that you have going on, correct? Is that kind of?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it was something kind of, because I came up the old school way. I just turned 39. I'm in my last year of my 30s.
Oh, and everything starts falling apart right now. Like at 39, everything starts, your knees will go, your back goes.
No, I already had all that go. Like, I have, just as a side note, which is miraculous, is that I've had, like, a form of arthritis kind of since I was, like, a teenager.
Oh, wow, okay.
Always, you know? So that's why, for me, technique was really kind of an obsessive thing to learn how to play with the least amount of impact and motion and working with the laws and negative space and all that stuff. But we'll get into that later. But when I was my biggest mentor, and I, like, literally, if I didn't have this person in my life, I don't know how I would have turned out as a drummer, musician, businessman, as a opportunivore. That's one of my favorite words. Is Derico Watson. He's from Muskegon, Michigan. He got the gig with Victor Wooten and like moved down to Nashville, and he did a lot of clinics and a lot of drum festivals and session work, and did a lot of stuff with like Stanley Clark in the bass world, right? Yeah. As a drummer.
Yeah.
And now he's out in Seattle with his family and he's doing stuff out there. But, you know, he was a guy, he's like, I play in church. I do church gigs. I do studio gigs for anyone. And I'll play if they hire me to sound like me, or I'll play if they hire me to sound like someone else.
Yep.
Someone calls me for metal, gospel, polka, jazz. If it's paying the bills, I'm doing it. Second, I play cover gigs and I do wedding gigs and casino gigs because that is part of the deal. You know, he just kind of listed all the stuff he did that was part of the culture then, because there wasn't virtual sales or digital sales at that time, right? 90s, you know, specifically early 2000s. So that was a big part of how I grew up, is thinking like, okay, you're a salesman, you're door to door. You got to find kind of your permanent gigs, your semi-permanent gigs. You got to have some residencies. You need to teach so that you have a consistent income per month. You know, you have to like balance your business as like a big pie chart.
Right.
As you as the brand and the self-employed business human that offers services. And then you break it down saying like, okay, well, really, you are either a product or a service.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or you can be both. Right. And in this world, you're really able to be both. You can be a service and a product, and you can be digital and you can be analog, right? You can do hand to mouth, door to door sales, like gigs and clinics and stuff like that, and session work and tours. And then you have the virtual world. And that's where I've kind of started to jump in. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of stuff at Dromio, and we have some stuff in the works in the future here. And then I'm going out to do a bunch of stuff at Drum Channel, and really help them with that. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the work that I can't
say
because I can't. I'm so excited. Like, there's literally a ton of stuff going on. I've been
working
my butt off. So I'm really excited. But yeah, so I started to set myself up that way, and just like doing, you know, FaceTime lessons, Skype lessons, or someone hits me up and asks me a deep question, and I'll say, okay, I'll just give you a big voice memo and talk the philosophy and the conceptual idea. So I got my hands in all that. So, you know, it's like, I want money coming in almost per minute, even if it's like a half a cent.
Yeah.
That's just kind of how I'm thinking. And then per day, and then per week, per month, per business quarter, and per year.
Right.
I think of that with all of my entities as a musician and brand, product, service. And then just because Michigan is being forward thinking, like how they really moved with the coffee game and really moved with the brewery game and the distillery game and the winery game, now we're in the cannabis and the hemp game. Mm-hmm. And I dived in deep with that because there's a lot with the diversity arts culture there behind that scene. And it's always been a part of the culture of music and arts. And now it's kind of, again, the Wild West in a way to find unique opportunities.
Yeah.
As to invest money, or, you know, to come up with products or to get sponsorships. Right. So now my life is kind of moving a lot more outside of the music world, outside of the drumming world specifically. And a lot of the stuff now that I'm starting to teach is very, very much not about me. I don't ever really want it to be about me, but it's about the drums and it's about the music. So I'm doing more stuff of recording with a drummer and a bassist, or a trio, or working with engineers and displaying what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve, what the reality of the processes are, or the process is. And I'm moving way more into the musical world and conceptual world to reach out to everyone else, because I think everyone needs a bit of what the drumming world has. We have a beautiful community. We share a lot of knowledge. We literally, there's no F's given at any time. We have no boundaries, really, other than gravity.
Right.
Like, gravity is one of the only things that can be a challenge, but we work with it or around it, and then it's actually a blessing. So that's kind of where I'm pushing a lot of the stuff I'm doing with the virtual world, and like the new record that's coming out. And stuff like that is like really, when I listen back to the new record that's coming out, per se, is like, I love thinking that's not me playing. When I listen to it, I go, oh, it's not me. You know, I'm like, it's not me, or it's nothing like that. It's like, I listen to the music and the vibe and everything and go, that's us.
Yeah.
That's the vibe of my culture and the people that I work with here that I'm really fortunate to work with. So with a long story short, you know, yes, I'm moving a lot to the virtual world. I'm definitely trying to push a lot more about the community-based stuff and really people trying to just see the actual reality of what's going on in the virtual world, because that's kind of like you used to say, like, don't judge a book by its cover. Don't judge a video by its Instagram.
Right.
You don't know how long it took someone to make that video, how much money they put into it, how much time, how much editing, how much mixing.
Right.
I think it's almost a disservice to a lot of people. This is me kind of just putting it out there. People putting out the highest quality content just to market themselves, yeah, because you're actually underselling yourself,
right,
and everyone else around you.
Right.
And I think people need to be really real about what they post, because you can have, you know, 500,000 followers and put all these killer videos with twirling sticks and all that stuff. But how's that actually going to work? Have you been through auditions? Have you been through really brutal rehearsals for tours? Have you been on a big tour? Are you able to have people chew into you and make you cry in front of people because you didn't do your homework?
Right.
You know, that's a whole world people are not aware of. And I just want to bring a little light to that, because in the real world, you deal with people. You can have people hate you on online, and you can block them or delete them or just not even pay attention to it. But in the real world, especially in business, people cut into you.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And it's brutal. You know, we've all been through it. I've cried. I've had my ass kicked enough, you know, young, old, whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
People got to be ready for that. So that, you know, in a roundabout, some stuff I want to start bringing to light to people. Like, I love the blessing that we have of the virtual world, but don't forget about the real world that we're in.
Right.
Get a mentor. Get multiple bands. Go and audition.
Yeah.
When we're ready. I know we've had a year where we can't do that, but people got to start thinking that way. Like, get out there and actually do the thing.
Right.
You know?
And yeah, this is a the funny thing is even though you feel like you're kind of like, this is how it is. Like, this is a common thread. I've talked to several drummers that, like, working drummers, like my last guy, he literally is in 7 bands and 5 of them are fake. Like, he's just like, we have this band that's literally just my band and it's just us playing Led Zeppelin. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but he was like, but we get hired out specifically for that. And it's a different band, but it's the same 3 guys doing Zeppelin and
they're
bringing a keyboard.
That's right. Being genius.
Yeah.
That's like when I book my trio or like a quartet, you know, or my trio featuring guests, I tell people, I go, okay, here's all the festival sets.
Yeah.
Right? When we're doing like the jam band EDM type stuff, this is what we'll do. And then here's what we do in this type of club, because this is how it works and this is how we can showcase our talents but stay busy. Mm-hmm. And then this is what we do for a wedding. This is what we do for a casino, right? And then blah, 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 stripped down to acoustic microbrewery or distillery.
Yeah.
My trio has like 7 or 8 levels of ways you can book it. And now I'm bringing it up to the quartet or quintet for a listening room, because I'm moving back into the jazz world, because that's where my heart's always been.
Is that terrifying?
I haven't done it. It is. I'm doing it for fun.
Yeah. That's cool.
I make my money off of everything else, you know?
Right.
So that's my passion. That's my passion. You know, that's like my artsy thing. But yeah, and then I run so many other groups because people say, hey, do you know something for this event? And I'll just be like, call my guys and put it together. Like, I will work anything, you know? And if I can't do it, I'll even still do the work and just book the band and get the youngins out there working.
Sure.
If it's something I don't want to do or can't do. But yeah, that's the smartest thing ever. We had a party band that we called Brown Chicken Brown Trout.
Nice.
Brown Chicken Brown Trout, right? Yeah. It stuck. And then like, we were also like, this particular artist's backing band, and then it was also without him my trio. So that group had like 3 levels, right?
Yeah,
3 different names, and it was so easy to have. If someone be like, we need 7 hours of music, be like, well, if you want to pay us for that, we can do it,
right?
Because we've got about 10 hours of music, you know, like. I would never do that unless it really paid a lot of money.
Yeah,
that's
death.
But you know what I'm saying, like, that's just how I think. Like, the biggest thing that people don't realize is, okay, you get followers or you get likes or you get an endorsement. It doesn't mean anything, really. It doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. And whether or not you get a Grammy, does it really mean anything or not? No, because there's politics, there's likes, there's money, there's marketing, there's labels, there's stature, there's, you know, all this stuff. It doesn't mean anything. What does mean something is you putting in a lot of hard work. And the moment you start to see that you're achieving those things, you don't even look at it as an achievement. You just start pushing past that.
Yeah.
That's what you do. It's like, okay, so you moved to LA and you got that touring gig and you did get those endorsements. Cool. Right. Now, what are all the other things you're doing to enhance that gig and with that, with you? And then what are you doing to market yourself to branch out to the churches or the schools that are around there that might want some instructors? Like, what else are you doing to enhance your career?
Right.
What else are you doing when you're on that tour to ensure you're always going to be hired? You know, go that extra mile, spend that extra time, even on a smaller level, just being a cover band. Show up early. And I didn't do this when I was younger. I was a dumbass. I was like, I'm getting hired to play drums and I'm going to show up and do my thing. No, show up early. Say what's up to the people. Help them load in all their gear. Help them set up the PA. Right. Hang out. You know, be the first one there, last one to leave type of thing. Actually does work.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't be a dick is really what you're saying.
Don't be a dick. Don't be a dick. That's the number one thing that we say here. Like, literally, don't be a dick. Show up.
Yeah.
Those two things go really far.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a virtuoso or a prodigy at anything.
Right.
You just have to have some common sense, a little bit of love and some heart, a work ethic, and learn to just bite your tongue the best to your ability. And if you don't, learn to apologize.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. That's my issue. But yeah, I a lot of what you were saying too is like there are those you know, the guys that go out to LA and do all that stuff, like you said, but they're also the ones that I've encountered where it's just like, that's it. Like, to them, they wanted to move to LA, get that big gig, go on a big tour. And when that all fell apart, they didn't have the technique to teach. They didn't have all this stuff. So now they're putting in the work to do it. And it's like,
yeah,
you guys, like, it's awesome that you got that far and you got all these followers, but you didn't put in the time for yourself. Like, you can't do a single stroke roll at blazing speeds. You can barely, you don't even know what I'm talking about when I say single stroke. Like, there's a lot of those guys, which sucks. And sometimes it makes me mad. Like, being an educator, having a music degree, for crying out loud, as a drummer, it's like, you got to put in that time. You know what I mean? Like,
one way or another.
That's not the stuff that you see virtually, like you said earlier. Like, that's the stuff that, like, when you would post things like my first touch of the day, even with all the mess ups, I love posting mess ups. I don't care.
Right.
Like,
I don't care either.
And if you own it, like, hey, this is me playing and, oh, shoot, I messed up. I don't care. Like, people aren't going to bash you for that. Oh, like, that's crazy that you're playing. It's like, who cares, man? Like,
push it. That's kind of the whole thing, too. Like, for me with business, like, you know, if I want to be a very refined player, I can do that. Like, I do that for a living for artists, right? Learning their music, playing the musicality, doing the job, and playing the parts and being very happy about the music. And I can also do that in the drum world in for the drummies, you know. But to me, it's like, okay, I can do that, and I'm doing a bit more to have patience and discipline to make sure I'm always connecting with the audience and the listeners.
Right.
You know, to like kind of take them on a train so I can kind of fuck with their heads
down
the road. That's something I've learned. But I never want to be a refined player where it's like, wow, that's incredible and amazing. But it looks like he's not even working. Like, is there any heart? Is there any soul? I want to cut myself on stage. I'm going to curse and swear. I'm going to yell. I'm going to break sticks, drop sticks. I'm going to crack jokes.
Right.
I'm going to make fun of myself. I don't give a flying fuck because I just want to have fun.
Yeah.
Let out what I've learned. Let you see into my world. And then hopefully whatever I did or didn't do inspire you to do something for yourself, you know, and say, I didn't like that, but I love that. I'm going to take that and steal it and run with it. Good. That's my intention as an educator or motivator or a coach, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm always just going to play my ass off in those scenarios. I'm going to go for blood because I don't know I'm going to die. I don't know how long I have to live, and I have to make my mark. And those moments is when I'm able to do it.
Yeah.
I don't do that on a cover gig. I don't do that on a singer-songwriter session. Right. I go in there with heart and soul and tame it down.
Right.
And be a vessel for what the artist and the producer want.
Have you found, like, because of where you've kind of, like, all the videos you posted and, you know, putting dog toys up and, like, doing all of these things, have you found that side of it as like the quote unquote studio musician, because you work, you're still doing stuff with Third Coast Recording, right? Like you're
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
house band.
A ton, yeah. That's I yeah, Mike. I do at least a session or two every week.
Have you found that people are just like, oh no, I don't want him here. Like he's gonna do some crazy thing and do whatever. Or is it more just like you've kind of. Have you established yourself on that side of things, like not where the virtual is, but have you seen it where it's like, oh, okay, like you can just go out and lay literally like a four to the floor simple groove while I just go off?
That's like, what I'm known for here in Michigan and like Midwest. Most people, honestly, they know me for that and they know that I have like a name, you know, international global name type of thing, but they have no idea what I actually do. Most of them think I'm just a four on the floor or train beat drummer because I do a fuck ton of that work in the studio.
But dude, that's what everybody wants many to hear. Tours. That's
exactly, and I love it. I listen to that music. Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite groups ever are a bunch of boys, or some of the boys they're out in Colorado and elsewhere now, but they're based and kind of started in Michigan, I believe, is Green Sky Bluegrass. Man,
yeah,
those guys are bad as hell, and there's no drummer.
Right.
I love it, and I play to them all the time. That's what most of the stuff I practice to is like singer-songwriter music without drums.
Oh, you should post that
stuff. Because
then
I can act.
You should post that.
Yeah, I will. I got a lot of stuff in the works. I have so much content that's not going to be out until like fall or winter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm holding tight to everything right now.
I noticed you took down a ton of videos and you're kind of regrouping, right? It's, I mean, really.
Yep.
So, yeah,
regrouping and eliminating and like – just kind of honing back in. But yeah, it's funny, like some people know that I do quirky stuff because like the chicken and the hi-hat video that went like viral 7 or 8 years ago, like a lot of people saw that and they'd be like, holy crap, I know that's Scotty, you know?
And
they're like, oh, that's hilarious. So people will actually be like, hey, can you make the sound, because a lot of artists don't talk drum language. So they're like talking blue and yellow and orange, and they're talking about, I want water, and I don't want anything metal, but I want it to shimmer like it's metal while using wood on a rainy, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, I got to get there. So that's why a lot of people hire me, is because I love that.
Yeah.
You know, so they know me for that. And like, literally when people ask me to open up on a session or like, hey, take a little solo or a quick little like solo fill for a bar and like go hard, I'm like, are you sure?
right.
You know, like I feel really uncomfortable doing that. And even on like on all the almost all the gigs I get hired out for, or when people you know, they're showcasing the band, be like, Scott, do you want to take one? I go, no.
Yeah, there's no point, and right?
And if they turn around, I'll just groove and then just be like, here, 2, 3, take a boom, you know, kick it back in. Be like, there's no point, don't need to do it.
Yep.
I don't do any of the Scotty stuff unless it's at a venue, like a listening venue or a drum festival in a theater.
Right.
Or on camera, because you can't see it, you can't hear it.
Right.
It only translates in a studio or listening venues.
Right.
If I'm in an arena or a big club and I start scratching and doing all this cool stuff, like,
can't hear that crap. Yeah,
you can't hear it, because most of the time it sounds like, oh, we're just going to cap it here, cap it here, cap it here. And the kick drum doesn't work unless you're hitting it at full volume, and, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, I go into different mode.
Yeah.
And if I have to solo, I'll go, okay, I'm going to go into like the linear, you know, chops fill stuff.
Just
do that, because it translates better.
Right. I was in a duo, or I am in a duo. So like, it's just me and another guy. And if he's playing keys or he's playing guitar or whatever, somebody would scream. Sure enough, I remember I was at TLA in Philly, and it was a terrible show. We were both sick as dogs. We could barely sing and do all this stuff. And I remember some guy was just like, play a drum solo, because like my bandmate broke a string or did something, or there was like a minute where it was just like silence or do whatever. And he was like, I literally went into my microphone, I went, I've been playing a drum solo for the last 25 minutes. Well, I don't know where you guys have been, but I'm the only drummer up here. I'm the only, like, there's not a bunch of people doing whatever. I'm playing a drum solo, so chill out. And everyone just kind of looked at me like, okay. And I've never been the solo guy, even like you said, like, hey, take one. Nah, I'm good. Like, I'd rather crack a joke than do that, because it's like, I don't feel comfortable.
Well, that's the thing, though. That can be your thing. That's what people forget about, is that, like, just having a microphone changes everything you do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's something I always forget sometimes on gigs. Like, I love talking to the crowd. I love talking to people. I love talking on interviews and stuff. But everyday life, regularly, I just, yeah. I'm quiet. I talk to my dogs. That's about it.
Right.
But it's like with you saying, man, you start singing, even a little beatboxing, crack a joke, say what's up to someone in the back. Like, that's fun. That's entertainment. That's bringing right. people in that you're aware that you're playing music for them.
Yeah.
And that you're aware that they're there listening to you.
Yeah.
It's a mutual respect. And people, you know, if you go up thinking, man, you know, I'm killing, I'm awesome, and everyone loves me and you should be all about me, it's like, that's just so you're, long and gone.
You're being a dick.
And then, you're being a dick. Yep, yep.
That's the whole thing. That's what I'm going to title this podcast. Don't be a dick. But like,
don't be a dick.
Yeah, but it, really, that's what it is. Like, you have to be in. There have been times where, like, in Europe or whatever, I'll crack a joke and it falls flat because nobody understands what I'm saying anyway.
Oh,
but,
yeah, like, dude, I've had some bombs for sure.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Definitely yeah. happens. Other than that, so when you did all this and you grew up on the farm, and when did drumming become, like, well, you said you listened to music a ton. When did drums yeah. kind of take over and be like your, this is it. I love this. This is where I'm going to go.
Right away. It, like, yeah. literally before I was born. No shit. Like, yeah. my mom was a elementary teacher.
Okay.
With Young Development. And the music room was right next to her wall. And when she was pregnant with me, whenever they were singing or playing or going through scales and stuff, as a fetus, I would start going crazy and kicking and really? Bugging out. And my mom kept joking, like, my son's going to, you know, either be a drummer or a soccer player. And her assistant, a teaching assistant, ended up getting me, like, a onesie or a shirt. Like, and I have it, or a little suit type thing.
Yeah.
And I had a snare drum on it, an old field drum on it.
Nice.
And that was my first, like, article of clothing. And literally by the time I was able to kind of, like, I was always thumping and smacking stuff a lot, even when I was real little. And then yeah. by the time I was able to kind of sit up, my mom and stuff would just give me, like, a cookie tin and a wooden spoon or something. I'd just sit and just whack the shit out of that thing forever.
Yeah.
And then the more and more I got control over my body, there's pictures of me where I took all the pots and pans and the cookie tins and set them up like a piano from low to high.
Nice.
Just on my own as a little kid, like probably 6 months old or something. And then I just played like that all the time.
Yeah.
That's my dog. That's Phoenix. She's just saying hi.
Yeah, right.
So that's when it kind of started. And then I just kept playing. My brother Nels got me a little set of bongos and some toy drums, and then got me like a Muppet drum kit.
Nice.
And I have pictures of it, and I'm like in diapers, and I have like Donald Duck earmuffs on. Probably I always wore diapers, cowboy boots, and like Donald Duck earmuffs and stuff.
Nice.
And would drum. That was like my style when I was, you know, a couple years old.
Did you go into, like, after the pots and pans phase and the kid drum set stuff, did you seek like getting into middle school, high school, did you really branch out and go for the education side?
Oh man, it went deep. I mean, okay, just from the pot, like, okay, let's go from pots and pans to bongos to Sesame kit.
Yeah.
Or the Muppet kit. Then my brothers were kind of gifted like a beat up drum kit that didn't really have everything put together, but it had some of the toms.
Yeah.
I remember it was like a blue sparkle kit and it was just kind of junk, but they put that up. And I beat the crap out of that thing. I mean, like, literally just trashed it to the point where my parents are like, we need to get this kid, like, a real drum kit.
Yeah.
And my brother, Chris, knew a guy that was selling a drum kit. And he didn't tell me. He said, hey, I want you to come to my buddy's house with me. We got to go pick something up. And I was like 4 or 5. And I remember it. I remember the truck he was in, the smell of that day, the temperature, man. And I walked down into this basement and there is this jet black, like, CB percussion drum kit.
Oh, yeah.
With chamber, whatever.
Camber. I had one.
Camber, yep. Yeah. And it had that, and it had, like, the Ludwig silver dot heads on it, you know. But it was a full drum kit.
Yeah.
Like, it was put together. It was mix and match. And I saw that thing, was like, oh, my Lord. And my brother Chris looks at me. He's like, hey, you got to help me put this in the truck. We got to bring this to someone. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So we, like, you know, put it in the truck and we drive to a music store and we go and pick up a couple heads and some sticks. And I'm still just like, yay, there's something going on. We're bringing this drum kit to someone. And then we drive back to the farmhouse and he's like, let's go play.
Ah, nice.
There we are. And that happened, and he had a double keyboard set up. You know, he knew how to play some keys. And my brother Chris, he's like 16 years older, and he taught me how to play "Jump" by Van Halen.
Nice.
And that was my first song, and then I started learning like Boston tunes, Journey tunes, Kansas. You know, all the music of like the 80s, oh, yeah. some of the rock and shit. And then from there, I started like entertaining at parties and dancing, and that happened. And then I got a drum teacher from the high school. And then that drum teacher, he was like the senior in high school. I actually teach his son now, which is really
cool.
That's
hilarious. Nice.
It's awesome. Yeah. And then there's Dr. Joy Smith was teaching their percussion, a great percussionist. So I started studying with her. And then I got drum lessons with big band through Tim Johnson. And I also got to study a bit with Tim Franchek. This is all 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah. Nine years old. Yeah. That was my schooling. So I was studying mallets, vibraphone, xylophone, timpani, all the orchestral stuff,
yeah.
and then all the big band stuff. And then at home, I was jamming whenever I could with my brother and some of his friends. And then I played the cassette tapes every day and wrote my own shows. I would make my own. Probably when I was about 7, I learned how to make my own mixtapes with my favorite bands. And then I would make my sets. And I'd dress up all crazy and like hit it. And then I'd like jump off the stage and twirl sticks. And I was a huge Poison fan. You know, Ricky Rocket was my hero.
Nice.
Tommy Lee. I still fucking love Motley Crue, man. I love Motley Crue and Van Halen so much. It's great. But anyways, and that's where it went. And then like I started to get into grade school. And I really didn't like the band program at all.
Yeah.
Just the way it was taught. The music we learned, percussionists always just sat in the back while the woodwinds worked. And then if we tapped on anything while we were in trouble and like put in detention, I'm like, well, you gave us drumsticks, you know, timpani mallets, marimba mallets, xylophone mallets. Right. You have all these drums in front of us. We're all gifted by being ADD or ADHD of some sort.
Right.
And now we have to sit here for 60 minutes and not play our instrument.
Yes.
You know, it was just like the band program was really whack and I didn't enjoy it, but I stuck through it. I ended up quitting like my junior year because I was just so bored. I went to choir instead because I had more fun in studying choir because, you know, when I was 16, I was gigging 3 to 4 nights a week.
Really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. And then I was doing student council in the morning, jazz band, 0 hour, and then I started school. So I did 2 classes before I started.
Yep.
I only slept 3 or 4 hours, and then I ran meetings, then I did like soccer, would do marching band, all that stuff, and then I'd go teach lessons, then go play a gig.
Dang.
And then I had to keep my grades at like a 3, you know, 3.2, 3.4.
Right.
So I could do that. So that's what I did. I learned that grind, and that's still part of my grind today.
Wow. So you know? Everything for you came very early, which is...
Really early, yeah. And I was like, someone said, you want gigs? Do this. And I wouldn't say, well, I don't want to. I'd say, okay. Learn these 50 songs of music you've never heard and you're not sure if you like it. Just do it. And then I was like, boom, I'm making $150, $175 cash at 16 playing drums.
At 16, you're like, I'm rich. Like, yeah.
Dude, I'm rich. And doing that 2, 3, 4 nights a week, sometimes in the summer playing 2 or 3 gigs on a Saturday and then a Sunday coming out with a couple grand. You're like, what?
That's crazy. Right. Yeah.
But it's not always like that. And, you know, I moved around and stuff, but that was my whole thing, is that I never settled. Going back to like, I don't want to play a drum solo that's organized and arranged, because that's not my thing. That my heart and passion is not there. I enjoy it if other people do it.
Right.
When it comes to my music or it comes to studying, I'm never going to stick with the same setup or the same sound. There we go.
Right.
I just always want to push forward, and I'm just always going to go the extra mile with everything. I don't like to be settled.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable being unsettled and constantly pushing. Like, I fast a lot, so I always can feel hunger to know what it's like to be hungry.
Oh, that's interesting. And you take that and put it into, like, that music side.
Everything.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yep.
It's a good thing. I mean, yeah, I came from it, like, a different way. Like, I didn't take a lesson until college. I was always the self-taught guy, did the thing. I remember being, like, I'm just going to play Rage Against the Machine. We started playing.
Oh, I love Rage.
Yeah, we started playing Rage songs, and it was just kind of like, oh, this is how we do it. And I learned grooves from Brad Wilk, but I also played in church. So it's like this counterbalance of like, you know, killing in the name of, and then I'd go play some worship set. It was just like this weird thing, but I had that, but then I had athletics. So I couldn't do gigs and stuff outside of those two things. I remember playing in pep band, and we played, I remember we got detention because we played in pep band, Wake Up by Rage.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Our AD was like, there's swear words in this song, and I know it. And yeah. It's just like, whatever, man. And so, but yeah, so we all got detentions because of that, which was stupid. But yeah, it was that same thing, but that the athletics took me into a different part. And then when I went to school, athletics went by the wayside when it started breaking things. And then it was like, okay, well, someone's going to pay me to go play. Someone's going to pay my way to go play music. Okay. I don't want to march. Okay. Let's go that way. And then, you know, it turned into like a, okay, what am I going to do from here? So then I started teaching, and then it was like, after like taking a lesson in college was the, I remember just like, I didn't play to a click. I didn't do all this stuff. I just had it in me. And then when it was broken down to like, hey, forget everything you know, and we're just going to do these rudiments, then it was like, what do we do? Like, oh no, like you, that I'm a dick, I'm cocky, that immediately mm-hmm. went away. You know what I mean? So,
yep. Yeah. That's a part of it though. Like, get back again with like the real world stuff yep. is that if you are a dick, you'll find out quickly.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because people will tell you, people will not hire you. People now will like cancel you or just show it on social media too. But like, I was cocky. I was arrogant. I thought I was hot shit when I was younger. You know, you think it is. You think you are, and you don't know. And obviously this day and age growing up, you can just wake up and be like, there are 20 million videos of like children, you know, ages 9 to 14 that are better than I am, you know?
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
like, that's a check. But the real world check is that whole thing is like, you get knocked down, brush yourself off,
yep.
get back up and go. And you swallow that pride. You learn to be humble. You learn to get your ass kicked and start to love it.
Yeah.
Just like in sports, you know, like
yeah.
when you're working out and you're like, ah, you grunt, you yell because you're really pushing yourself.
Yeah.
Do the same thing with music, and it's beautiful. And you have to have that. That's why you have teachers. That's why you have mentors.
Right.
That's why you play gigs with people, you know, 20 to 30 years older than you
right.
and, you know, 10 to 20 years younger than you. Like, you've got to work with all those genres. You think you're hot shit with metal and rock, try and play a big band gig.
Yeah. You're going to, people are going to be like, what? Yeah.
Yep. No, thanks. Like, I know my limits. I love big band music a lot, but I'm not that type of chart reader. I just haven't been into that, was never inspired
right.
to do it. I do read charts, but I am not sharp. I was sharp at reading charts in my teens and early 20s.
Right.
Not now. I write my own cliff note charts
right.
to get through a session or to learn 30 songs in 1 hour, you know,
yeah,
type
yeah.
of thing. But yeah, I know my limits. Scotty's not going to be doing that big band gig unless it's like for the community Grand Haven big band. I get to rehearse every Monday night
nice.
And really, you know, go through it. Then maybe, but, yeah, we all have to just throw ourselves into that position. Cause it'll put you in check, man.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good to have that.
That is good. That is good. I want to start talking about gear. You just got a new cymbal. I mean, I know we said like it's not about the endorsements, whatever, but
right.
this is a drummer's podcast. So you play
right.
specific gear. And I think with you, it's like the gear that you play, you love, right? Like it's
absolute 1,000,000%. It's not just the gear, it's the people and the business
right.
and what I learn from all of them. Like,
yeah,
I love business. As much as I love history and as much as I love fishing, foraging, and playing drums. So the companies I work with,
mm-hmm.
I work with them because it's like getting a college degree.
Yeah. yeah.
Learning from them and how the wheels turn.
Yeah. You were with Dream for a long time.
Very long time. Yeah.
Recently left them and you got with Peisty, I mean, like what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that? Like obviously it was probably building before that, but you announced it a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, the official announcement was on my birthday, the 27th
nice.
Of March, and we had planned that out. But the way, you know, it had been something building for a long time. I've always loved Feisty. Like,
yeah.
okay, some of my biggest drummers in my entire life that I love, and some of them didn't start out playing them, and they're there now.
Yeah.
But, okay, let's talk about Steve Jordan.
Right.
Let's talk about Stuart Copeland.
Yep.
I mean, my early years, the whole, I'm playing so many splash cymbals right now. I feel like that,
yeah.
that 14-year-old boy that discovered the Police and Stewart's playing.
Yeah.
My whole playing has changed because of this relationship. And we'll go into that too. But, John Bonham,
mm-hmm.
huge love of mine. I could keep going, right? I mean, there's just so many players. And then people in the industry, like every time I pop out to Drumeo, they just had a great stash. And Ron Dinette, I'm a big fan of him and his craftsmanship. And I love him like a brother, and he's a big like mentor to me. And I've learned a lot from him. And his ears and his taste is always great, you know? Yeah. And every time I would touch the cymbals, look at them, play them, feel them, I just said, damn, this is what I know, and this is what I hear. And it's like, I've always loved a side of me of like, hey, if you get this ride, this is the only ride on earth. But the fact that I've, over my life now, I've changed to being, I do a lot of fly dates with bands or artists, fly dates for clinics and workshops, fly dates of studio sessions and virtual sessions. And then I'm in the studio. I need consistency all the time.
Yeah.
So I need to know if I have this ride cymbal here in Michigan and I go to Bolivia.
Yeah.
The ride cymbal is there, is that sound.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's that way. They are like the most consistent company on earth.
Yeah.
No one, they don't even market that. They should. It's like a best kept secret.
But that's the thing. It's not. Like, you're right. They should market it. It's not the best kept secret. You know, I mean, shoot, man, I used to have a full run of 502s. Like, that was my, I wanted the 502. And it was just funny because it was like, I could crack a crash cymbal. And this is, again, early on when I was like 12 or 13. I'd crack a 502. I'd go to Cardi's Music in Ypsilanti and I'd go get another one. It was like, and it would be the exact same thing. Like, it was it turned into like that, you know, it was the same no matter what. And then obviously as I grew older, taste changed and all this kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's always been consistent. I had a pair of signature dry hats forever. I played them like in the studio. Yeah. And you don't see it forever, but that's cool. So what took you, obviously the love and whatever there, what was the final straw where you were just like, I'm doing it. I'm coming.
It wasn't really like a final straw or anything, but like I said, like with my life, I always want to go the extra mile. And if I feel I've capped out somewhere, you know, it's time to go. Like, I love everyone. I'm just gonna be very clear with Dream. I love everyone there. They're my brothers. They're my family. I am sad that I don't like get to talk to them and see them every day and plan projects, because that was a huge part of my life.
Right.
But they're always going to be like Andy Morris over there, mm-hmm. Craig Snowden, Brian LaRue, Kent, my boy Kent over there, like those are some of the most wonderful, loving human beings on earth.
They are.
Now I'll have coffee and food with them anytime. And I kind of felt like it was time for me to pass the torch. Like, I was the guinea pig and one of the earliest ambassadors for a really long time. Right. And I was with Sabian before that.
I left Sabian.
Yeah, not a lot of people know that. And I don't really try to talk about endorsement flopping a lot.
Well,
but just to share with people, like, it was the way that my career started out, you know, and then I was offered a really unique and fun position with Dream, and I learned so much about the industry and company that way, and I just kind of felt it's time. And then there's just certain things, and like I said, like, there's a sound I always want. I am getting older. My life and my career has changed a lot from 10, 11 years ago. And it's even growing and changing rapidly now. Like, right now, it's like this snowball of madness going on that I'm just trying to keep up. I had to start a media firm so I can have people keep track of what I'm doing, because I'm above my capacity now, where my head is. Like, there's always smoke coming out of my ears, you know. So that movement, I always admire Callie Peisty. I think she's a very, very, very strong and smart human in the industry, and very, very good ideas. And when we had some very good conversations, I felt like this is a new friend. This is my new sister from another mister. This is someone I want to like hang out and have food with and talk about what can I do to help the company? What can I do to help the artist? What can I do to help with education?
Yeah.
Promotion, marketing. What can I do to be your servant? What can I do to be your vessel to help build this team and to help push this product higher?
Yeah.
Because it is the best, in my opinion. And I'm excited to go to Swiss and go to Switzerland and check out the factory and do all that stuff in the future. And I have a very good, tight relationship with Gava and Gava Electronics with the G9. And Gava does, you know, DW and beyond. And so all my companies and everyone is working together now. So as me, it makes it very efficient that my team, everyone works together on company sides as well.
Yeah.
And business mind and philosophy mind, they're all on the same page. Yeah. Like DW, I was afraid to move to that company because I thought, uh-oh, this is where Scotty disappears because this is the biggest company in the world with the best artists in the world. And I literally have never been treated better in my life.
Yeah.
And like, I get teary thinking about it at times because I have learned so much from marketing, from product development, research development, from the clinic side, workshop side, the travel side, education side, seeing how things are tested, how things are innovated, how made. I mean, I literally have seen the entire side. I've been to China. I've been to all the factories with all the companies to see that side of thing. I've seen it in the U.S. I've seen it in Canada. I've seen it in Boston, you know, all over the world. I've seen this stuff. And DW has just been amazing because their philosophy is so chill.
Yeah.
They are very honest. They are very open. And they love what they do.
Yeah. That's a huge
They thing. Literally love what they do. And they love what they make. They love what they create. They love the artists that they are with. They talk to everyone on, like, you know, monthly, weekly, daily, sometimes hourly basis.
Right.
And they listen to artists. That's why they, in my opinion, have not only like the best and most innovative hardware, but hardware that has the goes the extra mile.
Yeah.
Because they literally want to prove their stuff wrong.
Sure. You know, right.
And they can't. And if they do, then they fix it. So they've really pushed that. And I think that philosophy pushed the rest of the drum industry because now all the other companies, you know, really make amazing products too.
Right.
So they really, I want that. I want, you know, if someone's going to be a great drummer, elevate all the drummers around you.
Oh, totally. Yes.
You know, elevate the musicians around you. If you're going to be a great company, elevate the companies around you. Make the competition better because that's going to make everything better.
Right.
That's how we enhance is if we push each other in a positive way and a very be very open with how you communicate that, what you like and what you don't like, and what needs to be done or not done. Those companies that I work with are very much that way. And I'm blessed and honored. Like literally the way I say, I drive by my farmhouse at least once a month just to say like, this is where I came from.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's close and you get to look at it as that constant reminder. I think that's genius. It's a way to keep you grounded and keep you, you know, aware of how blessed you've become and the things you've done, which is good. So,
yeah,
I think that's cool. DW was actually on my list to ask. I'm a Yamaha guy. So like,
I'm not gonna say that's an amazing company.
I mean,
acoustics and electronics.
Oh yeah.
And everything else. That's everything. A phenomenal company.
But like you said, like the fact that like obviously DW, I remember back in the day when I did retail at Guitar Center, I had a DW kit. I remember ordering it from them. It was amazing. I sold it when I moved to North Carolina just because it was stacked up in a closet. It was actually Blue Oyster Broken Glass. It was amazing. I mean, it looked like Mason, being from Ann Arbor, it looked like Mason Blue Swirl. So I was all pumped for it, but I was like, I loved that kit, and I actually had the snare forever, but when I was able to sign with Yamaha, it was that same thing. It's a very family-forward thing, and then the fact that, like, there's DW, there's Yamaha, I mean, there's all these companies, and they're all friends with each other. Like, they all know each other. They're all Facebook friends. They all talk to each other.
Well, yeah. Well, dude, it's like people saying, like, oh, this is my favorite basketball player, and 5 years later, oh, they traded to another team, so now I don't like them.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's a business. People have to talk back and forth. People move in between companies because it is a business. It is an industry.
Yeah.
Like DW and the Umbrella, they believe in education and the best products.
Yeah.
Yamaha is the same way. They start youth programs for people to work in the industry and understand it. And they do it with, you know, grade school to middle school, high school, college, and you can be an educator. Companies like that I really love because I'm a student first and foremost.
Yeah.
Then I'm a monk of drumming, and then I'm like a mentor, and then maybe a coach and a motivator, and then very low on that, I'm a teacher.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's where I see myself, and I like to align myself with companies that will help me become better with all those things.
Yeah, and that's I think it's cool because they both do it, especially those, they both do it. Obviously, the DW Umbrella, when they got LP and stuff, I'm LP guy too. And
I remember
Jerry, you know Jerry, right? You know Jerry?
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, Jerry's like the greatest guy ever, right?
greatest guy in the world with the best laugh and smile ever.
Totally, yeah. And
he's
so
amazing.
He is. And so the funny thing is like he was very much like don't worry, we're like everyone's cool. Like it's more, it's a very California mindset, really, where it's just like we're pushing each other. Because drum technology, I mean, the last 10 years, things are going so fast and moving so fast, but in a great way. There are failures and whatever, but there's a lot of pushing back and forth, but it's like friendly competition. If it was straight up just like DW is this way, Yamaha is this way, freaking Mapex is over here, and Tama's over here. Like if they didn't like actually push each other to be better, this wouldn't have happened. And we'd have the same.
Oh yeah!
I mean, the fact that like Ludwig is like on this huge rebound right now, and
forever. And it's I feel bad because I can't remember the gentleman's name, and I'm not sure if he's still there. But he was one of the masterminds behind like the hardware and stuff.
Yeah, the Atlas
genius.
Stuff. Yeah.
And then my buddy Ruben, he's an amazing engineer, and he's one of the guys that really has just pushed the game. Like the stuff he shows me, I'm like, what planet are you from?
Right.
Like, how did you think of this?
Right.
And but it's because of people now are taking ideas because maybe they really love to mountain bike and they're really into snowboarding and parachuting. And they look at those technologies and go, wait.
Yes.
That could apply. If it's saving someone's life or can get someone down a mountain.
Right.
It could work for drummers or whatever. Right. People are doing that now or saying, hey, maybe because the thing is weird. Again, I love the industry and I love the history of just about everything. Like, I guarantee you, I just had this conversation with Don Lombardi. I'm going out to do a bunch of fun stuff with him very soon. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't really know what heel down technique actually is. And people don't understand why the bass drum pedal is designed a certain way and it's still for some reason that way.
Yeah.
The dress code up until almost even the 80s, most men at most gigs still had heels.
Right. Yeah.
So that heel had that half an inch to an inch up.
Yep.
So that's heel down.
Right.
It's different. So the actual heel down, you have to imagine that you are positioned with your heel slightly off the pedal.
Right.
Okay. Because a complete heel down is a resting position and a feathering position.
Correct. Yeah.
And can also be used for open close, or you can look at that position really good for ghost notes.
Right.
Right.
Yep.
But heel down is actually slightly elevated, or you wear heels.
Right.
And then heel up is positioned a lot more because our hinges and our ankles are hip,
right,
knee, ankle, toes, ball of foot,
right,
et cetera. Right? And then the motions that can happen with all those. So we have to incorporate all of those motions and practice all those motions and really understand those techniques. If you don't understand why the pedal is designed the way it is, then you're always going to be playing heel down the improper way. And not actually, so you need to know the different positions.
Well, that's when you get shin splints too. Is like if you're playing like this, it's like you're gonna hurt yourself.
That's why it feels so weird, and your body freaks out when you do it. It's not natural.
Right.
So wear some heels or get a solid pedal.
Right. See, here's a business opportunity for you. You should put out your own flip flop line that has a little bit of a heel right there. It'd be perfect.
Yeah. There you go.
You can have that one. Take that one and do it.
No, no way. I'm splitting it. I have a firm belief. My business philosophy is that if you and I do any work together and that work together makes a profit, that profit only happened because you and I work together. So therefore, we need to make sure that our percentages are very comfortable working to one another, because if I didn't work with you, it would not have happened.
And that's a hard conversation to have, like with people in the industry, because it's like when you're dealing with points and like all this other stuff, it's kind of like, I mean, I just played drums on this track. Like, just give me what you're going to give me. Now, if I was co-writing and engineered it and did all this other stuff, then you're going to give me more. But that's a hard conversation to have, unless it's just like you go into it with the understanding of we're going to do something together. That's it. 50-50 or whatever it may be.
50-50 or hey, I started this thing and I'll invest this amount and so you just can jump on with the singing cruise. How about a 70-30 or a 60-40, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or like, hey, if you literally just sign this deal for me that I already proposed, you can just fill out the paperwork and send it out, I'll give you 15%.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like just get it done because it gets done faster with you. I just believe pay people well. Work with great people, you know, do things you love, work with people you love, everything else will follow type of thing.
Yeah.
Put everyone else first, sacrifice yourself for the music, sacrifice yourself for the people, for the earth,
yeah.
for the common good, for the money, whatever. And everything will follow. And I just think is people need to do that. When people invoice me saying, I hope this isn't too much, I will be very sarcastic and be like, it's not too much and it's not enough. So I'm going to pay you an extra 20 or an extra 40 because you're worth more than that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You're worth more than that.
And then they're like, oh, but then they want to come back and they want to do better and they want to like, it's
absolutely
it just snowballs, right? If you treat people well, they're going to treat you better. And then it just keeps going. That's perfect.
And empower that because then all the people around you are empowered to empower everyone else.
Yeah.
To believe in themselves, to not have fear, to ask questions, to ask for help, to get guidance, to move forward, to take that leap. And that's just something that literally is, it's fire. Like if you do that and actively do it every day, even connecting with people, even if like what I've been doing lately, because people always look at me weird no matter where I am for whatever reasons. Now, if I look at people and it looks like they're giving me that look, like they want to kick my ass, I'll look at them even longer and I'll even kind of walk closer to them, you know, and they give them, and eventually they'll crack and they'll smile. And I'll give them a peace sign and give them a salute.
Right.
Like you can get people to crack. I always see people and be like, your eyes are beautiful today. Have a blessed day. Peace. You know, like,
just
be nice to people. It will freak people out. Be in traffic and let people in.
I got a buddy that started his band. They just got signed recently and they're doing a bunch of stuff. But his clothing, like the clothing line, the merch side of it, he was just like, I'm going to do it myself. We bought a T-shirt press and his stuff, literally the band shirts just say people should be nice. And this was pre-pandemic. I'd wear a hoodie that said people should be nice because you're almost calling people out. Like, hey, just be nice. Like, it's...
Hey, man, we can make the polar and we'll do don't be a dick.
That
I'd wear a hoodie that said that.
I totally would. Oh, man.
We should go into that. Let's 50-50 that. That would be fucking awesome.
Yeah, dude.
We could, yeah.
I'm in. So other than that, obviously we mentioned LP. You play Remo heads still, right? And then Invader drumsticks. Remo's classic, right? So classic.
Remo, that was my bucket list dream. Like, I will die that way. If they can me, I will buy their product.
I've been trying to get in with Remo for so long, and they're just like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, we'll get there. We'll get there. It's like, come on.
Dude, it took me, this is a 20-year journey for me.
Totally, yeah, I know, for sure.
Probably about 15, 16. And I knew it was there, but sometimes you have to be patient. You got to be the old bull and sit on top of the hill and slowly walk down.
Yeah.
And then I work with Pro Logix pads.
Yes.
I love them. Those guys are the best ever. Everyone, again, on the team, they all play, they all educate, they all gig, they all innovate. They are lovely humans. I would tour with them. I share hotel rooms with them.
Yeah.
That's literally like the people I want to work with, whether they want to be stuck with me or not. That's how I look at it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not all that. those are the people I like to go out and hang with and have dinner and talk like we are and brainstorm and see what we can do. And then I'm doing some stuff. I love Revolution Drums and their cool, like, hardware products.
Yeah.
I'm starting to work with them and Stack Ring just because I love what Stack Ring's doing.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at, you know. I'm starting to open up with some other companies here that's in the work, and I'm kind of moving into the electronic digital world, mic world, preamp world, electronic drum world, guitar effects pedal world. I've been messing with that stuff now.
Oh yeah, okay. I'm excited about
it. For a while. I'm just not letting anybody
that.
Know, except for right here. I'm just not letting them see it, you know.
Well, you did get the EAD 10, right? Like that Yamaha thing. Dude, I told you, when I commented on that, I was like, it changes the game. Like mine's set up over there.
Literally, I was like, I'm open about this. Like I've struggled with anxiety and depression my entire life. And when that year happened, it was named twice, I was going to have one of the biggest years of my life. Tour-wise, product-wise, sponsor-wise, finance-wise, was like, it was on my goal. I was like, hell yeah. And then it crashed. And then everything else around that crashed. And a lot of things in my life and personal life crashed too. And I was like, I was depressed, man. I was bummed. And I looked at my drums and I just like want to cry. I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I miss you. I love you. How do I feel about it? And then it was Seamus, Dremio Gab, and Mike Bennett.
Yeah.
They kept posting about it and stuff, and I just said, I talked to Mike, I called him,
And I literally just went to Sweetwater or ordered on Sweetwater, got it. It was on back order because apparently everyone wanted it. And it showed up, luckily, like in 3 weeks, which wasn't too long. And once I got it, I was playing 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
I was a little kid, and it changed my practicing. It changed my focus, my recording. And I was like, oh, dude, I could do this live and during my solo stuff.
Yeah.
And it just opened a whole new can of worms. And then, yeah, I'm playing with double pedals and two different bass drums now. I'm not showing that. I'm using guitar effects pedals and using electronic kit with the acoustic kit hybrid.
Nice.
And double rides, double hats. My world now, the Scotty world, is getting real weird. So I'm
good.
I'm pumped.
We need it. That's great.
Yeah. So I love it. But yeah, thank you for taking your time and interviewing my silly self.
Nah,
and we're homies. We're family now.
I love
so
it.
Just reach out. Shoot me a text. Make sure I have all the info, and make sure you have all my info. The lesson or the moral of the story is:
don't be a dick.
Yeah,
love it. All right, buddy, I'll let you go pack and go do your stuff, and yeah, we'll stay in touch.
Amazing. Peace and blessings to you and everyone else.
You too, bud.
All the love. Peace.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Another Boom Chuck, a Drummer's podcast. It was an honor to talk to Scott this week. You can find him at scottpellegrim.com and obviously all the social media sites. He's going to be in your face coming up very soon on a bunch of different things. You can also check him out on Drumeo. Thank you, Scott, for joining me. It was an honor to meet you and definitely a fun discussion that we had. Again, everybody, thanks for listening. This is Boom Chuck, a Drummer's podcast. Find me on Instagram at Boom Chuck, and anywhere podcasts are listenable, I'll be there. I'm going to leave you with some audio from Scott's performance at Drumeo. This is a three-piece drum set, and he's just going off doing what he does. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.